education meeting tomorrow, starting at 3 o'clock at the school district office on Kearns Boulevard. In the studio with details, I have Interim Superintendent David Gomez. Good morning.
Good morning.
Anything you can tell us about the process to hire full-time superintendent?
Yeah, they have not. I know that they met over the weekend, and we're looking at some final candidates, but don't know any more details beyond that.
Okay. You're not part of the hiring committee?
No, I'm not.
All right.
Nope. It was a committee of parents and teachers first, and then the Board of Education. So.
Okay. Let's see. On the agenda is an update on master planning. The board will receive some additional information from the NV5. What's that?
Yeah, that's a company that was hired by the district to help us go through master planning. So getting all the agendas together, looking at details, organizing, because as you know, that's a huge event, something that we look to plan for our future. And so having that company come in and really get down to the nitty-gritty of what needs to happen is what they're there for.
Yeah, so what can people expect then with tomorrow's update?
Yeah, not too much with tomorrow's update, just kind of what we're looking at as far as master planning is concerned, but not too many details.
Yeah, I mean, was a decision made to hold off on this maybe until after we've got a new superintendent?
No, I think what they want to do is get it in place now so that it's functioning, operating, so that when the new superintendent comes in place, they can just hit the ground running. And so there'll be a couple meetings before the new superintendent, but then the new superintendent will take it and get into the detail of it.
Okay. You're prepared to give an update as your superintendent's report. This includes a final budget report to argue the case for hiring vice principal and interventionists.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're going to look at ratios of administrators to students in the United States as well as in Utah. I've talked with all the mostly it's going to be in the secondary for the assistant principals. You know, as you know, every year things just increase of the need for supervision, the need for coaching, the need for, you know, building relationships with students, and that just increases the administrative job duties. And so I'm going to present some of those things that I've received from the high school, from Treasure, and from Ecker. And yeah, I think we're going to make a pretty good case.
Mm-hmm. And certainly as a administrator, principal yourself, I mean, did you find that even at the elementary level?
We did. And that's also one of the reasons why we're looking at possibly hiring interventionists, which those are really more boots on the ground. Those will be people, certified teachers who have extra training that will be helping students with the current needs that they have. And that will relieve a lot of stress as well from our plate. But yeah, we run into that in the elementary level as well.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, principal's primary role is what? Is a teacher support and to make sure that we've got the best teachers we can?
Well, that's huge, right? I mean, you hire your team, and that's the biggest difference, in my opinion, in kids' lives is you can talk about programs all you want. You can talk about strategies all you want. But really what it comes down to is who their teacher is and how prepared their teacher is. And we've got some great ones here.
Yeah. So I guess is that kind of falling to the side as you have to deal with other issues besides kind of teacher-related issues?
Sometimes it can. Yeah, sometimes it can. And that's why, you know, having an extra administrator set of eyes would be fantastic and would be a great help to our system.
Yeah, we're talking about $1 million, though, I think, in salaries and benefits.
It's just under. I think it's around $800,000, I think, around there, I give or take a few. But yeah, it's a significant investment. But, you know, if we want what's best for our kids, this is what is going to help with that.
Okay. The Park City Board of Education is planning a tax increase, the truth and taxation scheduled for August, but the budget needs to be finalized by, what, June 20th or something?
It does, yeah. Yeah. So we hopefully can get a decision tomorrow, But I know we do have one more board meeting that we can finalize for those pieces. And I believe Todd Haber would be a good person to talk to, you know, on Wednesday when he comes in about the truth and taxation, that he'll be able to answer those questions for you.
Okay. Let's see. Treasure Mountain Junior High School science teacher Megan Zernensky.
Yeah.
She's presenting information on what's known as CCT, critically conscious teaching. So what is this?
You know, I'm going to need to get more up to speed on it. I'm excited to hear her speak on that, because I have not been able to get as much information as I need to answer your question, but will after her presentation.
Okay. So apparently she's starting a social justice group of teachers in the district. Is that part of the CCT or is that separate?
I believe it is part of it. But again, I'm gonna need to kind of get that tomorrow and then take it from there.
Okay. Let's see. Back to the budget. Again, we've got continuing the discussion from the May 1st meeting.
Uh-huh.
Any other big expenses besides the new positions that need further evaluation? I mean, we're good with our capital improvements and
yeah.
all of the security projects?
Yeah, no other big items
okay.
at this point.
You'll be presenting a brief update on the safety changes. Has there been a decision to hire a project manager? There was some discussion in past board meetings that between Todd Hansen's regular, very busy summertime schedule and the academic work that the superintendent has on its plate, there's just maybe another person
yeah.
needed?
Yeah, we do. And that did get approved by the board. We have a job description all ready to go. I believe that posting will actually go out either today or tomorrow. And so we'll be looking for someone to fill that position now. We're not going to wait. We're going to have somebody fill it now because we've got a lot of things coming up in the safety world. One of the bigger ones right now is we're looking at fencing. And so we're going to talk a little bit about fencing, look at the plans that were drawn up, as well as when that will be taking place, and then continuing on the other safety issues in the vestibules and things like that. So,
is this just a part-time temporary position?
Nope, it'll be a full-time position because it's not just about the projects that are coming up and the changes that are being made, but this person will be responsible for safety throughout the year. And so drills that need to be happening, you know, things that need to be tightening up, trainings that need to occur, making sure that we're doing our drills throughout our district, things like that. And there's plenty of others. And those job responsibilities, I believe, are posted. And so people can take a look at what those are.
But isn't that the administrator's job to make sure all that stuff happens?
Well, it is. But you also need a point person because it's a huge job. Again, we were talking about, you know, administrator roles. That is a huge one, but there's also just that coordinating effort throughout the whole district with the administrators, and that's a lot of what this person will be doing.
Right. But, I mean, we've got assistant principals to do that. Aren't they the point person?
In the secondary, yeah. But, you know, like I said, you know, Treasure and Ecker, we've got one assistant principal with about 800 students in it. That's one of the several duties that they have. And so to have a point person that can collaborate that at the district level is really going to help the process.
All right. Also, an issue on the cell phone tower. I guess that the district needs to decide, the board needs to decide whether or not you're going to approve this.
Yeah, I don't know that they're ready to make a decision on that yet. And Todd's going to bring us up to speed at the Eccles Center, I believe it's proposed. And I don't know that they're ready to make a decision on it. I think he's going to present information on the cost and what it, the benefit for the district, that sort of thing.
Yes. Do we know where this is?
Well, it's proposed on the Eccles Center, and so I do know that.
Okay. And we don't really know what it's going to look like, but another building is needed?
No, it's not a building. It's And I'm sorry, but I don't know the full details, but I know Todd will give it to us tomorrow. But it's outfitting cell usage in our building. It has nothing to do with building another building, that as far as I know.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to ask you about a couple of policies that are up for posting. Can you tell us the changes or the new policy with regard to resignations?
Yeah, that was really put in place so that if, you know, obviously if we receive resignations earlier in the year, it helps us with staffing so that we can get a posting out and then we can find really qualified people, because now is the time when people are looking for jobs and that sort of thing. And so just really increased it that if you are notify us by January 1st, and that the $1,000, if you'll get $1,000 if you're notified us by January 1st. So kind of an incentive. And then by February 1st, you would receive $750. And so just kind of trying to help that process move forward.
Okay. And there's also a new policy or perhaps a revised one with regard to social media.
Yeah, and that's just tightening up policy so our logo is not used on unofficial social media sites. And then we're reminding employees, those employees who manage their school's social media, that they should not express personal or political opinions on those sites. We haven't had an issue with this, but our communications director just wanted to tighten up to be more in line with our practices.
Okay, I was going to say, I mean, is KPCW an official, because we use the logo all the time on our postings, on our website.
Yeah, I'll check on that. I will check on that. But I think that's kind of one of the reasons to start talking about it, is to tighten that up.
Okay.
Yep.
Anything else you wanted to mention, Dave?
No, I think that's it. We do have one event tonight that if you're able to go, it's the, I don't know if you're aware of the Frontline Blue Line, the 6 p.m. at Ecker Hill Middle School. Just, you know, parents and police working together, always a good event when we bring those two forces together. So,
okay. Hey, thanks for coming
in. Thanks, appreciate it.
Joining me now in the studio with an update on many transportation and transit projects, I have the regional planning managers from both Park City and Summit County, Alfred Knotts and Caroline Rodriguez. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Alfred, let's start with you. Where are we with the UDOT studies? And I don't know if you're handling them. You both handling them. We've got one going for 224 and one for 248.
Correct. I'll defer to the 224. Caroline and the county have been the contract lead on that. But on 248, we have completed all the specialist reports and studies. So that's all their quality studies and noise, biological, cultural, recreational resources, and now developing a range of alternatives, which we'll evaluate against potential environmental impacts, and which includes both the human and natural environment. So we're looking to have some alternatives rolled out in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. It was something that you had brought up at a meeting that you had with the Board of Realtors, and a question I had asked. So when they find out that there's going to be now more cars on the road because we've got four lanes of traffic instead of two, we're going to see an increase in noise. So is that being considered?
It is. That's one of the studies also. The noise will increase no matter what, post or project or no project. So you evaluate in the environmental document all alternatives against a no project scenario, no project alternative. And that looks out to a 20 to 25 year planning horizon too. So you evaluate with project and without project. So that'll be in the environmental document also.
Yeah. And so does that mean then that Prospector residents will have an opportunity to vote whether or not they want a noise wall?
If that's one of the mitigation measures that's identified. There's other potential mitigation measures outside of a wall. Anything that can range from noise-reducing pavement, rubberized asphalt, landscaping, berms, softscapes, screening can also mitigate noise impacts also. So that would be a community decision also in a point where the community should pay attention in the environmental document about what those potential impacts are and what appropriate mitigation measures can reduce it to a less than significant level.
They can't use asphalt, rubberized asphalt on I-80?
No, that tends to break down. It's the type of facility. So given the freight traffic and the gross vehicle weight that and the volumes that are also on there, that is something that's considered. But they look at the lifespan of the project in concrete and more structurally sound asphalt is what they use on those types of roads.
Okay, and where are we with the study on 224, Caroline?
Yeah, so on 224 with the alternatives analysis, Alfred and I actually received a draft final report last week, and he and I just need 1 or 2 weeks to go over it and make any final changes, and then it will be released to the public, and we will identify our locally preferred alternative for a mass transit solution on 224.
There was a preference, though, for one of the three options, right?
Yes, yeah, for BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, and, you know, that's probably where it's going, but we just need to, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's and make sure we have everything put together in the final report.
Okay. So in terms of when we actually see construction, would they be different years?
They would, yes. 248 is on a faster, well, relatively speaking, a faster track because we are in the environmental process. On 224, when the locally preferred alternative is endorsed or accepted by the governing bodies, then that would go into the environmental phase also.
Yes.
And the county's allocated some dollars to that as part of the local sales tax revenues. To carry that project forward. So they would be staggered. And right now, UDOT is out there reconstructing that road right now as a maintenance project. I'm sure people are going to ask, why aren't we doing it now? We did approach UDOT, the county and the city, about potentially delaying that project so we could include the overall transit component of the project. But it wasn't lining up very well. And as you can see, the road is essentially unraveling by the day out there, too. So there was a little risk there. So we decided to proceed with the rehab project that's going on right now out there.
Yeah. So at one point, we were talking about building some kind of byway off to the school campus area. Is that being considered as we are thinking about plans for 248?
We are looking at access improvements and consolidation potentially. We'll obviously do that in coordination with the school district themselves. That master plan has various different moving parts. So we're going to focus on what the actual corridor would look like, cross-section, and then see how we can accommodate other access improvements off of the school district and also other businesses up and down the corridor and residential access as well. So,
and then what about the tunnel on 248 between the high school and the seminary? Is that also being considered as part of this plan?
That actually is going to be a separate project because it doesn't have to go through the rigorous environmental analysis that the environmental assessment needs to for the corridor. So right now we have about 30% design on that. We're going to approach the school district about two potential alternatives. We've been working directly with the school district and the seminary. Both are very supportive of the project. We need to look at how to reduce impacts to parking on the school district. So those are what the two alternatives lay out. And we think we can develop an alternative with no net loss to the parking or significant impact to the property. So that actually has the potential to go to construction this year. I think we talked about this on Friday at the Board of Realtors. That schedule would lay out to be September, October for construction, which I don't think is a very wise decision. So we'll look at staggering that and probably delaying it till the next construction season for 2019. But that also would give us, a better bidding climate also if we can bid a little bit over the winter period and when contractors are a little more hungry.
Okay, so again, in terms of timing, we're talking about maybe doing actual road construction on 248 as soon as 2019?
Yes, correct.
And then for 224, what would be?
It would probably be 2021.
Okay. Let me see.
Probably.
Let's see. One more thing I wanted to bring up with you, Alfred. Lots to talk about. But let's see. Coming up May 17th, you'll be bringing a request to the City Council to fund a transportation master plan. What's this?
We actually do have a master plan right now. It's the Traffic and Transportation Master Plan. it's essentially the transportation element of the general plan. That was completed in 2011, so it's a little outdated, to say the least, and stale. Also, our existing conditions have changed drastically based on second home ownership, commute patterns, economic conditions. So we're going to update that plan, which will give us a blueprint for the 2040-2050 planning horizon. But when I say that, it does have a 1 to 5 year near-term component, a 5 to 10 year component also, and it's a fiscally constrained document. So as a rural community, we actually rely on the state to manage our transportation programming for funding, given we're a rural community in classification. However, we don't operate like one. So we're looking to update that plan to give us really a blueprint and scenario planning for the next 5 to 10 years based on growth and then prioritization of what those projects are, and then also prioritization of funding for those projects when things may come online. For example, we don't know specifically when developments in Mayflower or Jordanella, those areas might come online. But as they do, we're going to look to reprioritize potentially projects and funding in conjunction with the county and with the state to address those potential growth concerns.
Now, you're also talking about doing a long-range transportation plan. Is that part of this, or is that something separate?
It is. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a long-range plan, and it really lays out the forecast and scenario planning, again, based on what the growth projections are and what entitlements are and how the community can best address those in a proactive manner.
Yeah. And then what's the cost associated with that?
The scope of work we have right now is about $550,000.
Nice.
Yeah. The plan we did back in 2011 was approximately $400,000. So this is on par with that. These are pretty significant efforts. There's a lot of public outreach involved. It will also coincide with our community visioning effort for the broader community vision that's coming forward from the city also. So this will be a focus on specifically on transportation. It'll be done in coordination with the county and with the state, and then also adjacent local jurisdictions such as Salt Lake City, UTA, and other areas within our sphere of influence.
Okay, and then another project would be the Deer Valley Drive bike and pedestrian improvements. Is this in the works, or is this... Where are we with this?
This is in the works, and we have a few alternatives that we've laid out. Some of them are a little more palatable to the state than others, so we might look at some interim solutions during this summer period, such as striping, trying to provide bike lanes, essentially, and more high-visibility facilities for bicycles and pedestrians on that corridor. It's not very conducive. We know we do have Poison Creek adjacent to the facility, but it's bifurcated by the creek, and it's not as accessible. And we're really trying to provide facilities for commuters and other types of active transportation modes that may or may not want to use an actual separated trail itself.
So traffic's, even though the speed limit is lower, traveled pretty quickly on that. Would it be a separated bike lane, or it's a bike lane like we see many areas, just a...
It would most likely be a striped bike lane on there. We have talked to them about lowering speed limits. The double-edged sword of that is when they go out and do a speed study. If it's in the 85th percentile, that's the speed limit they'll post. And typically they come back higher than what you would want. So again, we got to kind of be cautious, and we think there's other measures that we can slow down traffic and calming within the corridor also.
All right. And this doesn't require any widening of the asphalt. It's just narrower lanes.
Correct. That's what that's the preferred alternative right now. It's a low cost solution through some restriping, and then potentially having a more engineered solution down the road, both either on the hillside or on the creek side. But that comes with significant cost, and that's something we would want to look at within the community about prioritization.
Yeah, does that put Park City on the line then to have to rebuild the retaining wall?
You know, I actually requested some of those documents recently in structural reports, and they did come back to us. It is an ownership issue with the state, but right now it's structurally sound. It may not be the most aesthetically pleasing structure, but it is structurally sound. But any improvement, which we would maybe have to go above or below, we would look at how that structure may or may not be able to accommodate that.
Okay. Do you want to mention anything else before I turn to Caroline?
No, it's just it's Bike to Work Week, and May is Bike Month, and we have a bunch of events this week, and the county has some going on in the Snyderville Basin area, and we also have some going on the Kearns campus, specifically on Friday morning.
Okay, thanks for that. And then, Caroline, let's turn to you. Last week when the county council talked about improvements they might fund with new sales taxes, you mentioned a couple on your wish list. One of them would be to extend the electric bus to cover the Ecker Hill park and ride?
Yes, that would be on my wish list, correct. And that is just so we can serve those satellite parking areas, but maintain our 10-minute headways on the Electric Express that's been so successful.
So you wouldn't the frequency wouldn't change?
Correct. We would like to keep the frequency at 10 minutes.
Okay. What is the update on the park and ride?
We're moving forward as of now. continue to move forward. And I believe that they had a bid conference last week. I think Derek Radke would know more about that. He's heading up that project.
Okay. And then let's see. You also mentioned the weekend service for the Camas commuter bus. Right now, it's just Monday through Friday.
Correct. And I would love to add weekend service. It's something we've heard from a lot of riders, especially because we have choice riders, which are those that are choosing to ride, not because they have to. And we've heard a lot of, you know, my kids could ride, I could ride to the resorts, et cetera, et cetera.
So those requests are under consideration? Or?
Yes. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, it's Bike Share Season 2. I've seen lots of them out and about. Let's talk specifically about the safety of those. I mean,
sure.
Lots of kids riding them. It's not legal per se, but it's being done. So
yes. So we continue to ask parents to please supervise their children and please do not allow them or encourage them to ride the bikes because you think it's okay. We know your kids are responsible, you know, they're used to riding bikes, but these bikes in particular are not made for anyone under 18 to ride.
That being because they're so heavy?
Because they're heavy, because of the size, because of just the configuration of the hardware, they're really made for adults to use.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing just even with the fact that they can go pretty quick. I mean, what
yes.
are they maxed out at 14 miles
yeah.
an hour?
Well, we have maxed them out at 14 and a half miles per hour. That's when our assist shuts off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you wanted to address the comment because we had had somebody tell us
yes.
about just walking up to the canyons to try and get a, you know, yep. a bike and all of them not charged.
So I'm actually wondering if we put the bikes out on a Friday but didn't flip the switch, so to speak, until Saturday morning when the system was officially open. So I'm wondering if they were there on a Friday because we have had over 1,500 trips since the system opened for season two, and 108 of those were from the canyons. So we've had no reports of bikes not being charged.
Yeah. And again, I mean, do you really think it's getting people out of their cars? Because that's why we got them.
I do. And interestingly enough, I want to thank USU, Dr. Song. His team performed some analysis on our season one data. And what one of the data points that I thought was really interesting is when you look at where the bikes are being checked out, if you look at the Kimball Junction area stations, we see that people who check out in Kimball Junction are just as likely to check back in downtown Park City as they are in Kimball Junction, which so then we can infer that people actually are using those bikes to travel 224. They're making the decision to use an alternative mode of transportation.
Okay. Let's see. You have hired a brand ambassador, Chris
yes.
Putt. What's this doing?
Yes.
What's he
so
gonna do?
Chris is going to be on the street most, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, some weekdays, and during all of our important events. And he's just there for people who have questions. How do I check out a bike? What's the best way to ride the bike? Anything that you need, Chris is there to answer your questions. I can give out his cell phone number. You can text him. You can call him. If you have employees that want to know more about Bike Share and figure out whether it may work for them during the day, Chris is happy to come out to your business and talk to them. He's just one additional local face that's going to be around for when people have questions.
Okay, so what's his number?
His number is 435-513-0236. And again, Chris Putt.
Okay. So is he dealing with the issues that people have then with the
yep.
e-bikes?
He's the front line on the issues as well. But our lead logistics person is also local, and his name is Paul. And Chris will always be able to get in touch with Paul if there's anything, you know, going wrong technically with the bike and we need a mechanic out right away, or if there's something going wrong with the kiosk. All of our logistics people are local. We have four full-time logistics operators here in Summit County.
Okay.
We've also relocated our warehouse to Summit County. Previously, it was in Heber, and we're lucky enough to have it on Rasmussen Road, so the whole team is very, very close.
All right, let's see. What are the next steps with regard to the active transportation plan that you've got going?
Yep. So the next thing that we'll see is a lot of public meetings and charrettes. You'll see the entire team going out and talking to the various communities about what they need. There's also a really, really cool online map that people will be able to go and sort of just use their mouse to pinpoint different items that they want looked at. So over the next summer months, there'll be a big public information push.
All right. And then what is this active transportation plan? I mean, what's the purpose of it?
So the purpose of it is really, you could call it a bike and pedestrian plan, but it's really to identify what the county needs to, and its partners need to do to improve access for biking and walking and make sure that people are feel comfortable and safe biking and walking.
Okay. And is the school district involved as well?
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. We have a school district. We have a school board member on our advisory committee, and that's been very helpful.
Okay. And it looks like you're also getting riders on the Kimball Junction circulator?
Yes. I'm so excited to report that we've had over 50,000 trips provided since its inception last summer.
Okay. And any other improvements planned for the Pinebrook, Jeremy, or Summit Park area?
We are always looking at those. We would like to get those in. It's again, it's always a matter of what we can afford and what is the best return on our investment. So council is going to be talking to some of its municipalities and our partners about what instruments are now available for additional funding and how we can use those to add even more service to our transit service.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope. Just want to thank everybody for riding the circulator. We really appreciate you getting out of your car at least one day a week. It's made a big difference.
Okay, Caroline, Alfred, thanks for your time. Well, thanks to a generous community, the Park City Education Foundation just awarded $300,000 in school grants in the studio with details. I have the Ed Foundation's program manager, Sarah Hutchinson, along with programs director, Kara Cody. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Okay, so the money came all through donations? Who wants to take this, Kara?
Sure. It comes from our, back to school, which happens in the fall. We ask, each family to commit $180, per student. And basically is a dollar a day for the year. Also from Running with Ed, which is coming up this Saturday, May 19th. And also from our Red Apple Gala, which happens in the fall, which is our big gala fundraiser, as well as just donations that come in from our generous community.
Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. 300 grand then, huh?
Yeah.
For a year's
yeah.
worth
absolutely.
Of work. Yeah. And then that money all goes towards school grants?
The full 300,000 goes to school grants, and then each year we give out about $1 million in school grants, teacher grants, just different programs throughout the school district.
Okay, and so how does the money get spent, split
amongst the schools? Do you mean?
Between the district grants, the teacher grants, and the school grants.
Well, this year we are trying something new. We rolled the district grant budget, which was $150,000, into the school grant budget, and that's why we awarded $300,000. And the reason we did that is we really like to have the program managers at the school, and so we take a program like Latinos in Action, and instead of just giving it to one program manager, we have each school say, what do you need? And we ask them for an application, and those were due March 30th, and then we get together as a committee in April after reviewing all the grants, and we choose how we want to award the money. It's a really fun day, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So a committee kind of decides that.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. And then how are the school grants different from the teacher grants?
That's a great question. The teacher grants are really our grassroots programs. So those are funds for a specific classroom, and we award those in the fall. A lot of our school grants have been piloted as teacher grants. So this year we did a new program at Ecker called Blues in the School, and that was by Laura Starley. She applied in the fall for some funds to buy harmonicas for her sixth graders, and she brought the curriculum of her history lesson to life through these harmonicas. It was such a success. Maybe you read about it in the Park Record, and we saw her application for a school grant. So we took a teacher grant, piloted it, and now we fund it as a school grant.
So everybody has a harmonica.
I know. Watch out.
And then where is it taught? Only in history classes? Or
I believe she's a history teacher, mm-hmm. but we love to see that sort of program because it really is a cross-curricular program. That's the literature of that book and then the history of the harmonica and then obviously music. So that is a Gold Star program for
right.
sure.
Well, talk about then some of the other grants that were awarded for what?
Sure. You know, this year we kind of had some key themes that popped out, and that kind of happens each grant cycle. But makerspaces, mindfulness, college visits prep, as well as special education programs. One program that we are very excited to support, that we've supported for the past couple of years, has been a PE program for special ed students that we put on in collaboration with the National Ability Center. Students are able to, you know, do some of the activities out at NAC, and it's just a really, you know, just great demonstration of the community coming together to help kids.
And then what are some of the others that
well, we funded $30,000 are going to our robotics team at the high school, and that has just been an incredible program, and it continues to grow. So that is on the highest side. And then we will fund something at in the kindergarten classroom. This will be about the fourth year that Sue Manessi is funding animals to come into her kindergarten classroom. And so that's the Wild Wonders. And that's an $800 grant. And so we really see the spectrum from the kindergarten classroom to the seniors in high school in robotics.
Okay. Tell me, what are marker spaces?
Maker spaces. They are, it's kind of a new, newer concept in education. And what it is it's like hands-on, you know, kind of more project-based learning. And it's just creative spaces for students to basically, you know, put their STEAM skills into action, you know, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, where they can just create, you know, different hands-on things. And those are funded through the school grants at Jeremy Ranch, Ecker Hill Middle School, as well as at the high school as well in the PC CAPS program.
Yes.
So were you guys on the committee?
I was on the committee. I facilitate it. It's just a wonderful day. We have parents from each school representing their school, and then we have a few of our board members and our dedicated staff. And it's really fun. We met at the hospital. We meet for 3 hours, and it's hours of preparation to read all the grants. And before we even met as a committee, we sit down with the district administration, and we go through the grants, because what we also love to see is sometimes they have money for a grant application in the school budget. So they'll say, oh, journalism, yes, we love this program, and this year the district can fund it. It's always a goal of the Ed Foundation to fund a program, pilot it, have it be successful, and then ideally get it funded through the district.
So is the money evenly split between all of the schools?
It really isn't. We don't make that a priority. At Ecker Hill this year, I think we had like 32 grants or something. I mean, it was very, very high priority. And some years it flips. We'll have a bunch from Treasure Mountain. And so we do try and give each school money. And when we don't have when it's not totally split equally, we'll take some money aside and we'll say, why don't you come back to us with a grant that fits our criteria? And we do that occasionally. So it's a great day. We get to call around all the schools and play Santa in May.
Okay. And then, as you mentioned, coming up this weekend, we've got Running with Ed. We've got all of our teams ready to go.
Absolutely. Yep. All the teams are ready to go. And if anybody, you know, is looking for something to do on Saturday, we still definitely need some volunteers. If you're not into volunteering or running, please come out and hang out at the finish party at Basin Rec. It'll be the festivities will be going on from 2 to 4, and it's just $10 a person or $25 a family. So
what do you got happening out there?
There's all kinds of bounce houses. There's music, food,
beer.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's a really fun day. All the runners finish at the Basin Rec, and then all the teachers are there, and it's a happy day. So it is inside, and it will be well attended, I'm sure.
Yeah, rain or shine.
Okay. And then all of the grants that you did award will be online here, are they? Up?
Yes. If they are not already, they'll be on our website at PCEF4Kids. And I just want to say thank you so much to the generosity of this community for funding these grants.
Okay. Sarah, Kara, thanks for your time.
Okay.
Thank you.